This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Taylor Quimby, in for Virginia Prescott. The idea of writing a book about writers who drank too much sounds a little like shooting fish in a barrel. The relationship between addiction and creativity remains somewhat mythic and frequently mimicked. Remarkably talented writers and champion boozers like John Cheever, Ernest Hemingway, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and Tennessee Williams drank through successes and failures and kept going even as their creativity crumbled and their lives circled the drain. Olivia Lang knows a lot about books and writers. A prolific critic, she's deputy books editor for the British newspaper The Observer. She traveled across the U.S. to follow the paths of those we mentioned, along with John Berryman and Raymond Carver. Six alcoholics, two of whom ended up suicides, the others dead in middle age. Virginia spoke with Olivia about her book, The Trip to Echo Spring, earlier this year.
Well, first, that line from the title, from a Tennessee Williams play, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. If you could set up that scene for us.
Absolutely. So this is what I think is Tennessee Williams' greatest play, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. And it's about an alcoholic. It's about Brick, who's a retired injured sports hero who is drowning his sorrows in the bottle. And the play is set in his parents' house, which he lives in too with his wife Maggie the Cat, famously played by Elizabeth Taylor. And over again, he makes this limping journey to the liquor cabinet and he says about it, "I'm just making a little short trip to Echo Spring." And I just fell in love with that phrase. He means literally it's a brand of bourbon. He's just going over to drink some more bourbon. But he means something else as well, I think. And it was that sort of symbolic sense of what an alcoholic is doing when they're drinking and drinking and drinking that I really wanted to get to the heart of.
You put it so nicely, the sentence, I began to think that drinking may be a way of disappearing from the world.
And actually, I thought about that a lot. It's something about the way that drinking can be used both to escape, I think it's very much an escape, but also to suppress some sense of the self that one despises. So a lot of these guys really suffered from self-hatred, depression, anxiety, these sort of toxic emotions, toxic feelings that I think they were using alcohol to drown out. And to give an example, one of the ones that I really liked the most, I think, is John Cheever, who's a terrific writer. His short stories were extraordinary. He wrote five novels as well. And his drinking had a lot to do with all sorts of senses of anxiety and social unease. But in particular with this, he was married, he was, you know, had a family, but at the same time, his genuine desires were for men. His erotic life was about men, and he couldn't admit that to himself. And it seems to me that the drinking was very much a desire to just bury or drown out those sort of feelings. So I think that Baudelaire quote is really, it's actually quite accurate. Mm. But at the same time, I spoke to psychiatrists, I spoke to neurobiologists to really try and build up a multifaceted portrait of alcoholism as a disease.
You quote John Cheever writing that every comely man was aimed at his life like a loaded pistol. There's so much fear of being discovered, you know, as an imposter to the middle class and a heterosexual. And fear is something that Tennessee Williams writes about in a letter to Elia Kazan, I think, as primary reason that somebody drinks. What are some of the other reasons that writers say they drink? And do you think that those are accurate assessments or some other kind of delusion?
There's all kinds of different answers. Fitzgerald would say things like, I drink because I'm too sensitive. I drink because I need to loosen my thoughts up. And then later he'd say, why did I write that book drunk? I regret that so much. So those are the sort of excuse notes that get wheeled out a lot. And that's all very well. It works very nicely in the beginning.
Today, Olivia Lang is with us to unlock the literary liquor cabinet. She's author of The Trip to Echo Spring. It's a book about the love-hate relationship between six of America's great male writers and alcohol. Now, the one person who continues to boast about his superior capacity to, I guess, handle alcohol was Ernest Hemingway, at least in your book. Do you think he ever questioned whether or not he should be drinking?
As he got older, there was definitely a point around the time that he was writing A Moveable Feast where he was seriously having to take on how out of control his drinking had got and the kind of physical damage it was causing to his body. There's a description of Hemingway at that point with his liver protruding from his stomach like a worm. Mm. That's in somebody's letters. And if you look at his medical records, it's very clear that his body was in a terrible state. His doctors were very concerned, and they put him on a diet where he couldn't drink at all. And these are where you get some extraordinary letters where he talks very honestly about the effect alcohol has on him, about how desperately he needs it. But what's interesting is he admits it, he sort of admits it, but at the same time, he starts writing this book, A Moveable Feast, where he talks over and over again. It's about him and Fitzgerald in Paris in the 20s. And he talks about what a bad drinker Fitzgerald was, what an addict Fitzgerald was, and what a good drinker Hemingway was, how heroic he was, how he wasn't touched by any of it.
Did you notice in their writing this fear that if they stopped, their work would no longer flow? You know, that they somehow saw alcohol as a key to their creativity.
I'm not sure that they directly felt it was a creative stimulant in terms of producing their work. I think it was more that they felt they couldn't cope without it, that their whole sort of personality structure would fall apart. So you have Tennessee Williams writing these letters of, I'm empty, my mind has been destroyed by alcohol, my ability to think has been destroyed by alcohol. And interestingly, those sort of letters are written when he's writing Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, where clearly it hasn't yet happened, but he can feel that it's coming.
How many millions of alcoholics the world over have never published or written a word or have drunk and drugged themselves believing that they could also somehow unlock the muse? Why do you think it worked for these men in particular until it didn't?
Until it didn't, yeah. I think that's a better way of putting it. Because why these guys managed to produce such extraordinary works, and you think of things like A Farewell to Arms, For Whom the Bell Tolls, The Swimmer, these marvellous stories and novels, I think that actually is a mystery. I think that's an absolute mystery. And the other thing that I think is a mystery is how some people managed to recover, how people like John Cheever and Raymond Carver managed to find it in themselves to stop drinking after these years and years of addiction, after all the things they love falling apart, and to still at some point be able to say, I'm going to stop, seems extraordinary to me. And I think that capacity for recovery, which is what I end the book with, is so important to remember.
And you never, ever judge them, which I wouldn't think is easy from a person who grew up around an alcoholic. You write about that in your book. Diana, who was your mother's partner, could become a very bitter and mean drunk. How did you look at these writers? And did it ever cause you to question yourself and what drinking unlocks in you and all people?
I'm glad that you're saying that you felt I didn't judge them, because I think that experience, that childhood experience, really informed my understanding of them and seeing the kind of damage drinking caused them, and also seeing how hard they all tried to stop. Even people who didn't manage, like Berryman, tried so hard at different intervals. And I think there's something about that, something about the humanity of that, that was very moving to me.
Alcoholism remains a real mystery, an addiction in the human brain, despite what we now know about how the brain functions. But there are so many more opportunities to get sober. You know, 12-step programs proliferate. The language of recovery is out there. Do you think had these men lived in other times, it would have been much more likely that they would have gotten sober? And I guess the other question is more speculative. Would their writing have been changed by it?
I think if they had lived later, it would have been a very different story. I think it really is a 20th century story, this one. I think John Cheever's story would have been so different. I find that heartbreaking to think of. If he'd lived 40 years later, I don't think he would have got into anything like that awful sort of sense of shame and self-hatred. And that's one of the things that really breaks my heart about it. The question of what kind of work they would have produced is a really interesting one, because clearly people do produce great work when sober. Some of Carver's most beautiful stories, one of Cheever's greatest books. But the kind of experience that they turned into this sort of process of alchemy, of turning their experience into fiction, I don't know if we would have had that, but I don't know if it's worth it either. It's a hard call.
Well, Olivia Lang, what a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Olivia Lang is a former deputy books editor at The Observer. She writes and reviews and lectures widely. Her most recent book is called The Trip to Echo Spring. You can find more about the book at wordofmouthradio.org.
rum, scotch, vodka on the rocks, as long as all his troubles disappear. But he messed up his life, went and beat up his wife, and the flues he's gone and found another sucker. She's gonna turn him on to drink, she's gonna lead him to the brink, and when his money's gone, she'll lose him like that. It's such a shame.
We mentioned that the title of Olivia Lang's book, The Trip to Echo Spring, was inspired by a line from Tennessee Williams' Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. Williams is best known for his plays, but he also wrote poetry. In 1971, he recited 15 of his early poems for the Key West Library. Fortunately for us, the recording has been preserved.
The eyes are last to go out. They remain long after the face has disappeared regretfully into the tissue that is made of. The tongue says goodbye when the eyes have a lingering silence. For they are the searchers last to abandon the search, the ones that remain where the drowned have been washed ashore after the lanterns staying, not saying goodbye. The eyes have no faith in that too accessible language. For them, no occasion is simple enough for a word to justify it. Existence and time, not only their own, but ancestral, encloses all moments in four walls of mirrors. Closed, they are waiting. Open, they're also waiting. They are acquainted, but they have forgotten the name of their acquaintance. Youth is their uneasy bird, and shadows clearer than light.
Thanks for joining us today. If you like what you heard, there's more at wordofmouthradio.org. You can also follow us, send us your feedback, or share your ideas for the program on Facebook and Twitter. After all, the most fascinating stories do tend to travel by word of mouth. I'm Taylor Quimby, in for Virginia Prescott. Join us for more Word of Mouth tomorrow at 2 on New Hampshire Public Radio.
Word of Mouth is produced by
Taylor Quimby,
Logan Shannon,
and senior producer Maureen McMurray.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals
and not those of NHPR,
its Board of Trustees,
or its underwriters. Word of Mouth is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio.